Good evening, everyone. Well, welcome to our last class for this aspects. And what I wanted to invite in tonight is, yes, we're going to focus on the final sections of the Sandokai and the Suzuki Roshi chapters that relate to that, as well as continuing to draw upon Shaka Okumura's section on this in Living by Vow. And as we begin, I'm hopeful that everyone has read these chapters, and also the short talk, if you will, that Suzuki Roshi gives during Zazen. So if you haven't looked at that talk in this book, it's page 177.
Yeah.
We're not gonna read the whole thing, but oh no, that's an additional, sorry, that's the talk to, it's a different talk. What I am referring to, maybe someone else.
Page 147.
Yeah, short talk during Zazen. Yeah. And what I'd like you to do, if you have it open, page 147, is just to refresh your memory, just to give it a glance, and particularly this piece of that sit with your whole body, and as we talk about in Zazen instructions, checking your posture during Zazen, and where he says each part of your body should practice Zazen independently. Your toes should practice Zazen independently, your mudra independently, and so on. And with that, move to the end of that section. You can see where he says, let the water flow as this is the water's practice. Let the bridge stay and sit there because that is the actual practice of the bridge. The bridge is practicing Zazen. Painful legs are practicing Zazen. Imperturbable Zazen is practicing Zazen. This is our practice. And with that, let's close the books. And just let's begin.
Ms. Mondale?
Yeah. Let's just begin with a couple of minutes of Zazen. And if you will, imagine that you're in a context of Zazen instruction, or as Sojin Roshi often would remind us, that sitting on the cushion, you begin with giving yourself Zazen instruction. We do say in Zazen instruction to check your posture. So please offer that to yourself right now, however you're sitting. Check your posture. Bring the hands into the mudra. And now inviting in the essence of Suzuki Roshi's teaching here, which is that each supposed part of the body is practicing Zazen independently. And at the same time, this is one body. How is that right now? And as you practice with this, as we are practicing with this, you might notice if there's any kind of sense of, oh yeah, fine. Or if maybe there's a bit of tension, the sense of this is somehow words or conceptual, but you're having a hard time really reaching into that. But just notice that. Notice how it is to be with this instruction, this encouragement, this pointer of practicing Zazen independently. And as we continue with this, to also notice any kind of sense of the extent of this one body. There's any kind of subtle experience of what is inside and outside. And just noticing independently, all together, one body. I'm going to read the lines. I'm going to focus on them this evening, and it's we have several translations. So I'm just going to read one of them, the one that we chant here. Each of the myriad things has its merit, expressed according to function and place. Phenomena exist, oxen lid fit, principle responds, arrow points meet. hearing the words, understand the meaning. Don't set up standards of your own. If you don't understand the way right before you, how will you know the path as you walk? Progress is not a matter of far or near, but if you are confused, mountains and rivers block your way. I respectfully urge you who study the mystery, do not pass your days and nights in vain. I'm hoping that tonight we can really take a look at this in terms of the entirety of the text, and also why it feels, you know, both timeless but also really timely to the time that we're in. And I think given the time that we have, what I'd like to do is just hone in on particular pieces of this and share a few stories and then invite us into more of that with the focus moving us to what will we carry away from our study of the Sandokai that feels relevant and useful, and from that see where we go in terms of looking perhaps at more nuances of this section of the Sandokai. So for that, what I'd like to do is to play with these two translations and also with these two commentaries by Suzuki Roshi and Okamura Roshi. And so to begin with, this piece about merit. One says, each of the myriad things has its merit expressed according to function and place. And the other says, all things have their function. It's a matter of use in the appropriate situation. So those are a little different. And this business of appropriate situation as a place, you know, this is something that reminds me of two things. One is this koan where a student asks, what is the teaching of a whole lifetime? The teacher responds an appropriate response. And how do we know what's appropriate? And also, what exactly is an appropriate situation? Well, the appropriate always has to do with relationship. So in the same way that there's this teaching of how do independence and interdependence come together like this, how are we not perpetually sort of spinning around, jumping from one dichotomy to another, but to actually penetrate that. And of course, this is why we have a koan collection. And if you think about the koan collection, all those koans, those are all interactions. Those are all face-to-face encounters. You know, like the Lotus Sutra says, only a Buddha together with a Buddha can really bring forth Dharma. So I remember a moment of this that I've shared before, but in this context, I wanted to bring it in again. So if you've heard it before, hopefully you hear it in a new way, which is, you know, years back when I was one of the Saturday directors, and those of you who been there will appreciate this in a particular way, or machine directors, or really a lot of situations in life. And there was a lot going on, and there were a lot of people having a lot of feelings, at least as I was experiencing it. And I was feeling overwhelmed and not knowing what to do. And so I went to Sojin and I said, I don't know what to do with all these people and their anxieties and frustrations. And he laughed and he said, oh, that's simple. Don't take care of the people, take care of the situation. What's the situation? Well, now, as I'm, you know, when I read this, this particular translation, which was new to me, because it's not the one that we chant. And you know how it is that when you encounter something that's unfamiliar, sometimes it can, a certain phrase can pop out, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one that really popped out because, and then I remembered that. And so, in a way, when he was saying, take care of the situation, he was directing me to the, to see and to meet and to relate within an appropriate situation, not separate from it. So in that function of Saturday director, I am independent, and at the same time I'm intimately relating with everybody else in their place, in their function, and we're all flowing. We're all shape-shifting, and the appropriate is tracking with us because the appropriate is that relationship. And so we can also see here that situation, which we, again, English, every language has its upsides and downsides and in-betweens. And so as a number of people have said over the years, that to experience reality as both a noun and a verb is really, really important. So in the same sense that, you know, you might think that a situation is fixed, it's a noun, but a situation is also fluid, right? Because it's constantly shape-shifting. And so appropriate, on the one hand, is an adjective. But appropriate also is shifting. So even in looking at the structure of English, the use, if you will, the function, the expression, you know, Dogen has a fascicle called the Tokuji, true expression. So the expression through language, we already see that, you know, adjective, noun, verb, appropriate, situation, these are all moving, but they're also still moment by moment. And to carry this further, and this connects to the box and lid fitting or the arrow points meeting in midair, is that this business about independence and interdependence is basically similar. Because we're working, if you will, within the framework of being a person, and yet that's just also a function in the moment. We could, if we wanted to, shift our attention from person to and is that the breath of Judy? Is that the breath of the Sangha? Is that the breath of planet Earth? Is that the breath of the universe? And if it's the breath of the universe, we have to consider that when we're not on this planet, air is not air, right? And so this is also where we're tapping into so-called imagination to actually connect with the heart of this teaching, which is that on the one hand, we can't step out of our interdependence. We can't step out of for instance, being part of life on planet Earth. And yet, when we fully inhabit this place, this appropriate situation, this box and lid fitting, these arrow points meeting, somehow, mysteriously, ineffably, we have a sense of that. And that's why our stories are so important, particularly the koans, or the koans of Genjo Koan, the koans of our everyday life. I'll give you another one. I was on an early retreat, Sashin, years ago in another sangha. And in that sangha, we would transport all the stuff to a place we were renting or for the Sashin. And we didn't have, like we have here, all these wonderful instructions, you know, if you're the head dishwasher or if you're, you know, any of these things, right? So I had been assigned to be head of the cleanup crew following lunch. And it just turned out that morning, the cooks and everyone assisting them left quite a mess in the kitchen. And I wasn't expecting that. And so I walked through the doors and I encountered this situation that, let's just say, was really unfamiliar to me, where there was stuff everywhere. And I had one of those, you know, like they have those cartoons where the head explodes. Or we have this also in our iconography of Kuan Yin, but that's another story. And really, I just stopped. It was one of those moments, like in many koans, where, you know, the student has nothing to say. They're stuck, right? And I was just standing there dumbfounded. And then this thinking started, the organizing mind, trying to figure out how we were going to move this pile to over here and this to over here. And as all that was happening, my teacher at the time, Enkyo O'Hara Roshi, she just came through the doors because it was on the way to where she was going. And she saw me, I imagine, and she walked right past me, rolled up her sleeves, beelined it to the nearest sink, and just started washing dishes. And then the rest of the cleanup crew started coming in. And without a word, everybody just picked up something and started moving. And miraculously, we found a way. Now, nowadays, there's a whole field of study. You know, I think it's Adrienne Marie Brown has a book. I think it's called Emergent Strategies, something like that. And also complexity theory talks about, like, if you have an ant colony, you have to have a minimum number of ants until some structures emerge, like all the different tunnels and cemeteries and this, that, and the other in an ant colony. But when they have critical mass, they figure it out. Now, I say figure it out, but this isn't really the thinking that comes, if there's thinking in that moment, is thinking within and as the box and lid fitting, the arrow points meeting, the appropriate situation, the appropriate responding. Now, there's more here in these lines, but I'm also noticing, you know, the time. And so I think we'll get to some of those things, particularly the piece about standards. Do not set up standards of your own. Do not set up standards on your own. What exactly is a standard anyway in this kind of a shape shifting, right? So I think we'll get there. But right now, what I want to... what I want to invite us into is to just get together in groups of three. And two things. I think our overarching theme is what will we carry away from the Sandokai that feels relevant. So that is, if you will, the overall question. But I also want to invite in the possibility of just take a moment with that in mind of perhaps a moment, a situation, that you've encountered, and maybe, you know, a situation either in what we sometimes call formal practice, you know, like something in the Zendo or in Sangha life. Maybe you were in a position, maybe you were a server, you know, or you were sitting Zazen, or, you know, whatever it might be, or maybe just in daily life. And if you want to, just share very briefly to the essence of how might that have been a moment of being with this teaching, the arrow points meeting of the appropriate situation and a response, just this sense of you were really present and feeling that, touching into that kind of intimacy and the freedom that comes with that. And if what's coming up for you is maybe you had the opposite kind of experience, then share that and what's important. So, Mary, how are we with setting up the groups?
We are ready. There are two groups of three and one group of four. So I'm about to, I will put also what I'm, I don't know if I've got the chat, what you've said in the chat, mm-hmm. right, because I was busy doing the groups, but here we go.
And 3 minutes each. Let's see.
Group of four, or do you want to be part of the group?
I'm happy to be that, but I think we would have to do... yeah. Why don't we do three and two?
Okay.
Why don't you and I do the group? You three do group?
Okay. So,
sure. Yeah, and just choose.
Okay.
Three of us? Yeah.
All three of us? All right. Over here in the chair.
So it's 3 minutes each. I can sound a bell at 3 minutes.
Okay.
Well, right now I'm really thinking about your example of being Sunday director, because I think that's such an alive place for me that this comes up. And I was just, we just had a resident check-in yesterday, and I said this thing that I've been sort of throwing around. It's like, it's sort of like a joke, but I'm like, oh, I discovered this thing as center director. It's called give up before you serve. But it's not like in a defeatist way. It's like, give up the idea that I'm in control of really anything that's happening. And what I'm actually doing is I'm just going to be there and respond to things as they come up. And for me, that feels like it's a similar illustration of what you were talking about. But as I started in the role, I could notice the tightness in my body and my anxiety about, oh God, how is this going to go today? Oh, is this going to go right? What's this? And as I could let that go, that was kind of part of this, like, just give that up, just give that up. Like, that for me was a source of separation, actually. You hear the word director and it sounds so big and important and you're in charge and you know everything. And that's like a part of the function of the role. But getting caught up in that is like, but I'm not, I am singularly this separate entity. I'm not really here orchestrating anything. I'm just in and responding. And with that comes so much ease, even as things fall apart or are wonky or something's late, like even in the moments that would be a point of tension, I can find out a relaxed way to be with them. So that was sort of one thing that came up for me. My takeaway with the Sandokai, or maybe it's a question, it's really enlivened this question for me. I think that's what I'm taking away, is that experience is really rejuvenating to just really sort of submerge into the moment and respond. Having this feeling about, like, but the fact that the human mind sort of instinctively, automatically creates the separation that we're kind of constantly waking up from, it's also part of everything. So that's really a mystery thing for me.
So next person. Finish your thought.
Like,
I'm off the mirror. Too. That was pretty much it. It's like, yeah, this serious thought, like, it can be easy, but then
it's sort of a situation in
contemplating non-dualism to make another dual,
as a whole,
to then make more dualistic thoughts within it. Of like, oh, I need to remove this thing of being separate. Like, have this question mark.
So maybe
that's not so either.
On my job.
The separation. Talk about everything has its opposite. So we don't have that experience unless we maybe had this other experience or this other very human experience of separation.
So
the way our mind can sort of detach and make sense of things and oppression.
Pretty much perfect. I'm in the right situation. I'm not quite sure how I got there.
What's coming up for me?
It all seems to fit. Like, you wouldn't be able even to predict it. Just thought.
Unlike what I might do.
And what I think is
another occasion.
I made a choice not to do that, and then stuff happens, like coming early enough to see that,
have this whole process,
the unity,
what to do in the relation of the whole, you know, she started to get attuned in the body and then relationality, but, you know, it was so clear. And So I'm having this sense that just getting it's not about writing something down the presenting it. It's about bringing that warm-hearted ability to respond into the room. And how do we, this is what I'm curious about, how do we bring that into our conversation? So, because even though, again, he's giving talks, and we're writing that down. Okay. I know it's short, you can move on to the next person.
Okay.
Is how, finish your thought. I'm curious about that. I'm curious about, of course, trust on everything. You read it and did what you're about. It's really like, okay, you've read it, you've distilled it. Now, where are we? And I think that's what I'm curious about. So, inviting him a little bit, tell a story. You're telling a story, teasing out, but we also have an icon.
Oh, right.
And yet, you're in the role of the set. Beating
something
volatile at the same time. And what I'm noticing is in preparing for this kind of study, we heard this one. It was that whole situation. And I thought it was that one. When I parked, that was the moment. Told me I had to move along.
There were many
exploded.
It looked like we were like very
5:30 in the morning. Am I present? Through all of it, not knowing. And that discernment.
It's like another
time. And thoughts came up. But they didn't dominate. And so it feels like everything is like this. Whatever it is you're studying, and that's itself.
Now we haven't got to the standards yet, but I'm curious at the moment when we were sort of
pivoting
with Jean and Nut with the sewing,
which is like you just like.
I almost had the thought of like if they're in bed with like insistence, like classes, this one, this. Could that have been like the state when we talk about a standard or creating like an idea and then be hold to that? Almost tighter than by don't let it really show. So maybe like running a little bit at what. It's where we get stuck with our thoughts.
I think that's what I'm noticing. That's part of the conversation. Like, I feel like when we're living these moments, that's where this comes alive. We sit here going, well, what did he do? We could do that. And I think you've not already done. But that's not a good thing up yet. Wow. And you know, when you have a moment like that where you feel like, oh, that was. Oh, they're going to come back. I'll come back. I didn't give instructions.
There's a club.
I'll just go. But when the teaching comes alive, like that, like, wow. You can feel that sense of, it's also the truth. It's like, wow, that would have been more than that. Now things are.
And so we're in this not knowing, well, I don't know if it wasn't out and it's over. But here, it just feels all good.
Yeah, that's really bringing the teaching to life. Noticing that it's so easy. The standards are so alluring. They're so beguiling. And they seem like completely at odds with relationality or like such a blockade.
Yeah, you know, give yourself maybe a couple minutes to just, if you haven't already, just talk amongst yourself, because I'm not seeing them coming back. I think they'll come back shortly.
Okay.
And then I'll sound the bell.
Okay.
Process of discernment. It is similar. Well, my experience of this morning was so interesting on that situation like that's the right thing, because my dominating inner narrative can be like, I need to come see all the data. I need to do something. And that's often, that can be helpful sometimes, but sometimes it's not helpful. And so that's really what I work with. So with that particular situation, I have to sort of relax into just trusting everyone around. The moment I sort of picked up on what was happening, I could see that there was someone who had already been going talking to them. And I just thought, like, horde of people moving towards this direction might not be helpful right now, given what's happening. And I just sort of went to the Zendo and started doing metamorphosis for everyone in the room and for him outside. And as I was doing that, I could see somebody was sort of hesitating on the set, like looking out, having probably a similar thing happens for me. And do I do something? Do I not do something? And I could just sort of allow that person their experience, like, okay, this person's demonstrating. I'm just going to go into the Zendo. And it was really a feel it out. Like, I find I have to, like, really feel it out moment by moment.
Okay, and let's...
Put this over here, because I'm afraid it'll mess something up if I close it.
Welcome back, everybody. Oh, I see some smiles. That's a good sign. How was that? Anyone have something that you want to ask or comment on, share? Yeah, Jake.
I'm already muted. Oh, each of our anecdote stories had to do with meeting the unexpected. And what do you do with that? So that was kind of a theme.
Any themes within that? What do you do with that?
Well, it was all about being at BZC and either work period or kitchen or I forget what some of the others were. But
helping in the Abbott's office.
Yeah. So
and the. Doing the bower of flowers.
Well, I don't know if she wants that.
Well, anyway. Well, I'll just say how rich Sangha life is in providing these situations where, you know, so rich in yourself interacting with others, and what is the appropriate response? Mm-hmm. You know, what is the situation and meeting the situation appropriately? It's just, yeah. I think that's one of the best things about Sangha practice is these things come up.
Yeah, no one way, not always so. And you know where we're going to go with this. We're going to go with this to that line, do not set up standards of your own on your own. What exactly is a standard anyway? What would it be to be on your own? Anyone else? Any discoveries or surprises? Did anyone else have this theme come up around meeting the unexpected, encountering the unexpected? Someone just appeared.
Where's that?
I'm not sure what that is.
Someone's raising their hand.
Oh, okay, Sue, yes.
Yeah, when you said what's coming up next, do not set up standards of your own, I never got anything concrete about that until you said that. And we've just discussed these unexpected situations that we faced. At least that's what we did in our small group. And I remember in another pre-Zen group, training, it was that the definition of an upset, you know, is unexpected. It's an unexpected disappointment, or something happens you don't expect, and I know I get upset, you know, sometimes. And the thing, like Jake said about Zen practice or community Sangha practice, is you get lots of exposure to that, and you learn. I think I've learned to roll with it a lot more. And that's been a huge training in community life and in perhaps, you know, dealing with all the people in my life, letting go of having to give my expert opinion, for one thing, and see what works, you know, what's going to happen here. And sometimes it's really funny, you know. And sometimes disappointing. And sometimes really aggravating. But because we're in community with it, it's like, oh, this is part of our human experience, you know, it's okay. At least that's what happens, being in community.
Yeah, and part of what I hear you speaking to, Sue, is that this is really about what is the true reality of this moment, and how do we interact? How do we, so to speak, keep it real and also keep it kind, keep it heartful, keep it close, really stay close and not know. And keep returning, just like we say, you know, if the mind wanders, keep returning. If you're counting the breath and you lose count, return to one. So this thing of this poem is also about Zazen. It's that we share the same Zazen, and yet each of us has our own practice. And how we take that off the cushion. So I think also, you know, in our Sangha life, is we make sure that we sit. We make sure that we do have that as the steady engine So that when the unexpected comes up, as it's always coming up in Zazen, if you will, like that exposure, even though it's completely unknown in a certain way, it's familiar, which is kind of interesting. How can something that's completely new and unknown also be familiar? Well, it's familiar because we're never separate from reality. We're never separate from being this one body. And if that's so, then what exactly, and let's go there, what exactly is a standard? You know, what is he talking about that he's setting it up in the context of don't you set up a standard? So does that mean there is a standard, but it's not your standard? This is something I've been pondering for a while, because we chant this, you know, we chant this every week here, sometimes more. We're going to chant it tomorrow morning, as we do on Friday mornings anyway, but it's also the founder's ceremony. And it's kind of interesting, like, why that chant for the founder's ceremony? Have you ever wondered that? And also, you know, why did Suzuki Roshi choose this? You know, it's very different than Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Especially, have you noticed that the Q&A in these sections? One of the things that was coming up for me around this whole standard thing is, do you remember this section where the student is saying, well, I can't chant this vow about, right, saving all beings, because I kind of don't believe it, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And Suzuki Roshi seems to me sort of gently kind of inviting him back, or inviting him into a kind of not knowing or whatever. And the student keeps coming back to what appears to be kind of a fixed idea. You know, if I can't. So, and at some point, it's just, you know, you wonder, could someone do this in this day and age, right? But yeah. And maybe someone's going to find this before I do. But there's something in here. Oh, yeah, again, you know how things jump out. And the last thing Suzuki Roshi says in this book, it's page 173, is he says, truth is truth, and I can't agree with you now. Maybe if I were your age, I could agree with you quite easily, and we would be great friends. But now I am not your friend. Can you imagine? You know? However, you have to put yourself in the room. I mean, in the intimacy and the vulnerability of not just these two people, but that whole gathering. And what's interesting is we don't know. We don't know what happened to that student. We don't know if he or she or they stormed out of there, you know, or just kind of rolled their eyes, or really took it to heart and went back to, you know, the bell rang and they had this the next Zazen.
Maybe eventually they became an abbot in San Francisco.
Maybe they did. This is so intimate, you know, to be that real. And I think to really be honing in on standards. And we might ask, if there is such a thing as a standard, what is its function? One time I heard Norman Fisher say, he said he puzzled over this for years, and he always, for a long time, he thought that this line was about, oh, right, do not set up standards of your own. There must be some other standard, you know, like the, I don't know, you know, the practice committee set up the standard, or Dogen set up the standard, or Shakyamuni Buddha set up the standard. You know, somebody set up the standard. And maybe I don't know what the standard is, but by golly, there is a standard. And then one day, it dawned on him, oh, wait a minute. Maybe what it is there is no standard. There's no fixed standard, because everything is constantly shifting. Or standard itself is fluid. Yeah, Gary.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that I think he's pointing to reality, that that will be your path. What's under your feet will be your path. Or so, your standard.
So it's like we, what's that saying? We blaze the trail as we walk the trail.
That's good.
Or the way Sojin would say in this very Zendo when we were, you know, slow Kinhin. I think it was on New Year's Eve one year. And in the old days on New Year's Eve, this Zendo was so packed. That Kinhin was so slow, you couldn't believe it. And you couldn't believe it. It was like one of those jokes. How many people can you fit in a Volkswagen bus? Like, how many people can... So, you know, and it's really, and we kept the lights really, really low, you know, really dim. So it's the end of the year, you know, all these people, many people have never even been here before, never probably stepped in a Zendo. Sojin says, so it's really quiet, except with steps. And he says, we're moving, but we're not going anywhere. Someone had a hand up, right?
I stuck a hand up.
Yeah. Oh, you had a hand, and then Libby. Yeah. Dan.
I had a sort of different take on the standards, but that, like, the first thing in the Sandokai that I remember is that line, don't set up standards if you're wrong. For me, coming to practice here was about just surrendering and going with whatever is happening here. So I'm not going to, but for me, don't set up standards of your own was adopt the standards that are there, that are inherent in the situation, and go with it, and don't criticize, and don't think, well, there's a better way. Mm. I mean, in my case, I'm coming into a 800-year-old practice tradition. And so my intention was, if that's part of the practice, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm just in an open-minded, open-hearted way to just accept whatever practice is and not criticize it. So for me, that's don't set up standards of your own. Is, you know, don't have, you know, sort of accept the practice as it is, and don't try to. Or maybe after 20 years, I might know enough to make some suggestions. So it's about humility.
And it's interesting because as I was listening to you, I think at one point you put standards and situation together in the same sentence. Because particularly as a newcomer, I might not be very clear on what exactly is going on here. Like, what is the standard? Like, you know, some places it's when you enter the Zendo and you cross that threshold, you cross with your left foot or right foot.
Here it would be right foot.
There you go, right?
We don't have that rule.
And I can't remember. And furthermore, it makes no sense.
Well, it's the door closest to the door jack, the hinge.
Or there's a reason. And
that's a logical explanation, but then why?
Right. It's like a little kid, you know, you could internally ask why. So this thing of there's something to you know, or as Suzuki Roshi was speaking right about the Tassajara quote rules, that it doesn't mean that they're the rules for everywhere or they're the absolute best rules or whatever. There's the Tassajara way or the BZC way, and that in following those and in also teasing out, well, what is that right now? For instance, tonight, Well, these classes are happening in the community room. And we have a whole setup for that. And that's where we're meeting. But an hour before we're supposed to meet, I walk into the community room and it's full of sewing stuff. And, you know, there's this moment of, well, do we move the sewing stuff aside and sort of, you know, make space for this? And started to go in that direction. And then almost immediately had a sense of, you know, whoever is sewing tonight and stepped out for a dinner break, right? And how might they feel to have all this stuff just moved around? And immediately together, you know, in this case with Lori and Shori, of just pivoting, just recognizing, oh, let's move. Let's move. And then with Mary, trying to figure out the tech to, you know, to, and we had some bumps there, but just trusting the process.
We had hands up, Libby, and then Gary.
Thank you. Go ahead, Libby.
Forgive me, to your left, I forget his name.
Dan.
Dan, thank you so much. I wanted to make a point similar to that, that there are standards. I mean, the mudra is a standard. I gather that Sojin said you're supposed to sit, and then there's a rice grain distance between your thumbs. So that it strikes me as a standard. I mean, I first learned to meditate doing standing post, where you slightly bend your knees, you hold your hands out, and you stand slightly with your knees bent for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, so forth. Good for your quads. But that was a standard. And the way that we're taught in Berkeley Zen Center, it strikes me as a standard, and they're good standards. But I gather Sojin used to say, you sit this way, full lotus. And then he got old, and then their chairs were okay. So people have to, some of us need to sit in chairs and so forth. So these standards do, they shift, but they're still, there are standards.
Thank you, Logan. And Gary.
Oh, I just wanted to add to what Dan Jackson was saying, in that I also think in another level that he's, whether you believe it or not, whether we have an ego or not, that he's talking about letting go of the ego. Don't set up standards is like let go of your ego and be okay with it. Just my take on it.
As he says, standards of your own. That's like the ego.
Yeah. But a lot of people don't believe in the ego. But I know for myself, I can get emotional. And if I let go of that, I can be more present. And that's whatever that is, if it's an ego or if it's just emotion. But I think he might be talking in those terms too, not just, you know, like Zen Center, this is the way you do things, the rules and all that stuff. He might also be talking on a deeper level about fighting things and embracing things. Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
I see your hand, Mary. What you're speaking to right now reminds me of also the teaching of not always so. For instance, we don't sit on the meal board. That's our standard. But when the zendo's packed, sometimes we pull the zabutons forward or we get a support cushion and people sit on the meal boards. But our middle way is that we cover the meal board. So, and there are a lot of other examples of not always so. So I just want to invite in also how does this, so to speak, letting go of ego and standards also connect to the relational moment of not always so, of meeting the unexpected. Mary.
Thanks. So I want to bring in the alternate translation in the Okamura text, which is, don't set up standards on your own, which you alluded to. And when I read that, it really felt like how I've felt about forms, which is they're like agreements. They're agreements about how we harmonize with one another and how we move around the zendo so as to create a harmonious and understandable circumstance under the situation of being silent and not saying hello, and we bow instead of saying hello, or we move right. And if we were in a monastery in Japan where we were also sleeping in this 3-foot space of the tan and in full robes, everybody turning in the same direction actually really does matter. I mean, it really does create a kind of harmony. So there is a way in which it's about how we function in concert and how it's a social agreement or harmonizing. And it feels to me like that's connected to the precepts, which are how do we create a wholesome environment for all of us together in behavior that supports one another, and what are the things that don't support, and then those are the things that end up creating problems, and then there's a precept that gets created. I mean, so it feels like the standards have something to do with total dynamic activity, or figuring out how to participate in that almost ineffable functioning that you were describing earlier.
Yeah, and again, to bring in this piece about independence, you know, if in Zazen, the pain in the knees is practicing Zazen, and the hands in the mudra are practicing Zazen, and wherever else you're experiencing a sense of tension or ease, or that moment that you recognize that this body is not only this body, it's these bodies. It's the moonlight coming in, you know. Are important. What's the standard of the universe?
Karen or Nancy has a hand.
Please.
I think this is probably just my version of what several other people have said, but when I hear don't set up standards of your own or on your own, I know I had a lot of big ideas about practice when I started and for many, many years, and I still struggle with that, but you know, measuring myself and other people based on my own self-created ideas about how I should be or things should be, and letting go of that kind of opinionatedness. And then I believe that what comes after this line, I don't have it in front of me, is if you can't see the way right before you, mountains and rivers block your way. Like when you're so full of yourself or think you're right all the time, you know, also you just bang into things. So anyway, that's my take on it, kind of dropping my attachments to opinions.
Someone have a hand raised? Sue.
Thank you. I started remembering there was a woman who was a member who I would say was quite full of herself and wanted to be seen as a teacher. But she always was late. She'd always drag in last during the lecture on Saturdays. This was many years ago. And Sojin finally let her have it, you know, during the lecture. And it was sort of like the standards of polite behavior or taking care of respectful behavior. I don't know where he was coming from, but he was able to express his annoyance. It was appropriate, I thought. I think she felt insulted. Other people may remember this and have a different view of it, but it was sort of like, well, finally, you know, somebody said something. And sometimes I get a dope slap, as the car guys say, the Maliazzi brothers on the radio. You know, sometimes we need a dope slap, but that was a correction. And not all corrections are public, but they could be. And that would be a hard job that the abbot has.
You might have to do something harmonious to promote harmony.
Well, it, that whole thing of the harmony of dissonance, you know, John Cage, and there's a lot about that. But really, how do we harmonize with dissonance? You know, are we, do we, and we all have our conditionings and habit tendencies, which also come forward in a sangha. You know, we tend to be conflict avoidant. Do we tend to, you know?
Let us remember that this is in the context of the poem translated as, titled as, you know, Harmony of Difference and Quality, right? And so we're talking about standards. How do the standards help promote equality and difference? I think both of those things are important. And so having, like, you know, it's not about setting up your own standards, which might be more promoting difference. I would, that would be my kind of my default. But, you know, as Dan was talking about, like, meeting into the standards that help quality, but then also there's a balance that not always so is how do those code to come together? How did, like, the strict standard, which is promoting equality, come together with, you know, needing to be flexible in order to maybe promote more difference and understanding as situations are dynamic.
Well, and also this piece of humility, you know, so for instance, in the context of this, Rinzai and Soto, or, you know, any of the other schools, and or we might say, you know, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and many denominations within those, or Baha'i, or, you know, something that I don't actually practice. And I might not even realize that I have, you know, I have a, I don't know what to call it, you know, a belief system or a reactivity to that for whatever reason, recognized or unrecognized. How might that play out? And how do we shine light on that? Well, sometimes it's through the tension that can come up. And how do we practice? Sometimes there's this phrase of cultural humility, but we could, you know, broaden it to just humility around all kinds of things, which has to do with don't know mind, don't know. And so in that Nen moment of recognizing, oh, there that is, suddenly there's a standard. Now, whose standard is that? Is that a cultural standard? Was that a family standard? You know, that kind of a thing. And if so, you know, there's this whole term, implicit bias.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize the bias because it's implicit, but we shine light on it together and through all kinds of things. So those two are standards. Are those ego standards? Are those relational standards? You know, how do we not judge those standards either, but drop into, flow with, if you will, reality is the standard. So switch out the word standard, which, you know, for many of us can bring up all kinds of stuff. What would it be like to switch out that word for reality or intimacy? How could you set up intimacy on your own? By definition, it's what is on your own anyway? On your own is the independence. Then that's Indra's net. You know, we're all independent and we're reflecting each other all the time. So perhaps do not set up standards on your own or of your own means it's actually impossible to do that. So what we're actually being open to is that reality is that there is no standard of your own. There is no such thing. It's not possible. And yet, we each have to enter that gate for ourselves. And of course, this is why we're in Sangha, because Buddha and Dharma come forth as Sangha. And the same is true for Buddha, that these three are like this.
Hearing you talk about just everything you just said kind of reminds me of the last line, do not spend your days and nights in vain. And that line has often been I've been curious about it. What is that? What is to be in vain? What is spending days and nights in vain? And I think you just pointed to it by, because it is impossible to create a reality on Earth, because that's not actually possible. So that's the effort that feels in vain. And in the context of the conflict he was even seeing in Zen, of like people arguing over the better way, whatever. Like that was sort of each side sort of like, this reality is the reality. And that felt sort of like peace that felt in vain.
So something about humility also, or an openness. And at the same time, for instance, we just had an election. You know, we have a lot going on. We have opinions. We have positions. We act on those. Are we acting out of some standard? Are we acting, is the standard the appropriate situation? And we're meeting it and we're making it. We're blazing it as we walk it. So I think part of what's going on with do not waste your time, or, you know, do not spend your days and nights in vain, is don't get stuck. Don't make this, you know, as they say, don't put another head on the head. Don't take this literally. Don't make this into dogma. But really enter it. That's why we chant it. And that can be very uncomfortable. I think it's a really, really important question. At least that's a takeaway or carryaway for me, is what is this standard? Do I have some fixed idea of what a standard is? So I'm curious in these final minutes, if there's a question that you're pondering right now from this teaching, something as a an open question, an inquiry that you're leaning into. Yeah, Sue.
It's about upsets. Upsets happen because I have standards, I have expectations. Sometimes I'm aware that I can just use them as an opportunity to look more deeply, you know, and see how what the fixed view is. There's a fixed view in there. I think that's one way to recognize what my standards are. What is it that I believe here that is causing me such discomfort and disagreement and anger? And it's sort of a, if I can get to that point, it's a useful tool. Oh, I have this standard, you know. I'm going to keep this standard, but how can I avoid the suffering I have with it? Something like that.
Anyone else? Yeah, Mary.
This is actually not a question so much as a takeaway. What's resounding in my head is you're suggesting substituting the word reality. Don't set up a reality of your own. I'm going to be pondering that for a while.
Anyone else? Any takeaways? Any questions?
Open questions?
Yeah.
So when I think of standard, I think of like the bar of indium that's 1 meter long, all comparisomer. That is a meter that defines it, you know. It's a little longer, it's not right, you know, it's got to be. So it's like a pure, shining thing that is exactly true and right is a standard. And are there even really anything like that, you know? And if you measure that 1 meter bar 10 times, you'll get 10 different answers. So that's when reality meets the standard. Anyway, those are the kinds of things I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. Is there even any standard at all, really?
Yeah. So that was, that's kind of where I was going on this is the word ethics comes up for me. Like, is there something underlying all this, not so different than what you said, Dan, is there a real right and wrong somewhere that you can hang on to that then you can just apply to any situation?
My takeaway question is, how do I include my experience of separateness?
Could you say a little more about the separateness?
Well, if it's independent of everything else, do I want it to go away? And if it goes away, am I including it?
So the independence you're considering is independent of.
Well, just in that description of like the hands are doing zazen, the feet's doing zazen, my experience of unity is doing zazen, my experience of separateness, is it doing zazen?
I was just thinking of it as, you know, independent of your own, independent on your own. What would it be like to just drop the of and the on? What is independent? Any last thoughts?
Thank you.
I have one last thought. If I'm doing zazen, my toes are doing zazen, my nose is doing zazen, my fingers are doing, my ears, there's a lot to keep track of.
Leave on the book.
And but actually, if I keep track of it, I'm not doing zazen anymore. I'm doing something else. So that the way that it works functionally together has, is like if you don't try to make it be some particular way, you don't think it into some particular way. They can only do, all those different parts of me can only do zazen if they're just doing zazen. My brain just does zazen instead of trying to keep everybody else heard at all.
Well, it's like they say, you know, if you, you know, the liver is doing the liver independently, and the, and yet everything is functioning together. And thinking is thinking. That's a whole. Right? There are many teachings and many places we can go with all of that. Right now, I really would like to thank everybody because these 4 weeks, I think, have been really a very deep and rich dive into what is this, you know, and I think everybody's been very, very wholehearted and willing to go, you know, to vulnerable places and just really look at this. And I think also just see how it's relevant. And I hope that we can continue to be pondering these things as we continue to practice. And if you're able, you know, you could Zoom in on a Friday morning, you can't come in person, and just also chant the Sandokai together. I think there's something about returning to it on a regular basis that can really feel. What is this? So thank you. I also want to thank Mary tonight and all these nights for hosting and navigating. This whole hybrid thing continues to be its own. I don't know what to call it. Situation. Unfolding situation. But I think we've really made it very appropriate. For these weeks, you know, we're finding a way to be close. And as they say, to those known and unknown who've made all of this possible. Now I forget, are we closing with the four vows?
I think we can do that, or you can dedicate the merit.
In this season, where the leaves are turning, you can feel the chill in the air, transitions. May these branching streams flow on and brighten all those who need to feel kind of light. Also know they were held intimately in the darkness on this near full moon night. Thank you all.